Welcome to Engage Boise. We hope that you enjoy this live recording of our Sunday service.
Love being here together. Today, back into 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. We're going to be reading and unpacking together 1 Thessalonians 2, 1 through 8. And we're talking about how to be real, the mission God has sent us on. Sometimes, you know, you write these messages every week. Sometimes they come out like exactly how you thought. Sometimes they don't. This one did not come out how I thought. So just so you know, different than I imagined when I started working on it. It was a few weeks ago, pre-baby, when I started like reading on this stuff. So we've been talking about the Thessalonian church, how the Thessalonian church that Paul was writing to here, they were trying to serve God in this really busy capital city that was very influential in the Roman Empire, but it was not easy to do in the city they were in Macedonia. Thessalonica, if you read up on it, sounds a lot like Boise. We introduced the book. We were talking about how Paul, he wanted the Thessalonians to know that they were made for the time and the place they were in. Even if they were frustrated about life, they were made for the time and place they were in. Just like Queen Esther in the Old Testament, we spent just a minute on that story. Just like Queen Esther, they were made for the moment they were in. And God, just like us, God had given them a mission within that moment that they were in. And the same thing applies to us this morning. It might seem like the world has gone completely haywire and sideways. You might be the person, I think we're all this sometimes, you're just hoping to like make it to work and back wherever you have to go without a confrontation with somebody. Right? I was at one of my son's baseball games sometime this week, and my son John's been playing for a while. This is my son Luke's first like real season, and I've helped coach John's team, so I'm always in the dugout, and Luke's can't help coach because got the baby and two kids on teams and all the crazy dad life, right? So Luke, he gets to play catcher. If you know Luke, man, Luke is like he's like the kid in the guy in the Lego movie. Everything is awesome. That's Luke all the time. And he's having so much fun. He got a hit his first at bat. He went out. He got to play catcher. He killed it. And I just wanted to tell him, hey, Luke, good job. It was amazing, right? So I kind of like, I'm usually in the dugout. But I can't go in there because I'm not a coach, right? So I'm kind of peeking around the fence, like trying to get his attention just so I can say, hey, Luke, awesome job. Dad saw you. And I hear this guy like growling behind me, like just literally grumbling and growling. It was between innings. Nothing was going on. And this guy was mad that I was blocking his view of home plate at the eight-year-old Little League. And he starts talking to me. He's like, hey, I need you to get out of the way so I can see the game. And I was like, just want to say hi to my son real quick. And he's like, yeah, sure you do. You're going to stay there. And I just had to, okay, good job, Luke. I'm going to back off right now so to have a confrontation in this baseball game. Sometimes the world is a little haywire. Sometimes people have had a tough day when they go to the Little League game, right? Sometimes it's a full-time job protecting your kids from how fallen the world can be. Man, that's real life. But amidst all of that stuff, God, he has given every one of us this mandate to tell other people about him. Amidst all of that stuff, God tells us, your job as Christians is to tell people about me. We've been talking in this year, in 2024, about how our hope as believers is to become disciples so then we can go make disciples. Right? You've heard me say that, to become more like Christ so that we can, in turn, help others be more like him. And the reason our title this morning is How to Be Real is because if you went out and you asked 20 different people what they would like to have in their relationships and friendships, you'd get 20 different answers for sure. But one thing most, if not all of them, would have in common is that they would want the people in their life to be real. Right? They want them to be genuine. They want them to be honest. You're probably just like me, right? When you are interacting with anybody in any way, you want to be able to tell what they're getting at without having to guess. You don't want to have to be on the lookout for hidden agendas, even in interactions for people that I would not call friends, just people I run into, right? We want people to be real with us, right? If you ever work on your own cars, you go put tires on your car or whatever, man, these are people you want them to just be honest with you. Right? When you're like, I need to buy this one part for my car, you don't want them to sell you 47 other things that they think you might need in order to fix the car. And say, well, you can just bring it back if you don't need it, when they know full well you're never bringing it back once you get out the store. This week, I had to go put tires in my wife's car, and I had to just like talk to this nice guy that was trying to sell me stuff I didn't need, right? What we want in life is people to be real with us, not be trying to fake us out. As disciples of Christ, we're hoping to introduce others to how wonderful our relationship with the living God can be. Sometimes we spend a lot of time worrying about things that we are sure are just going to move the needle a lot, right? Our presentation, how we look. Maybe we're going to go to work and we have this perfectly thought out 10-part dissertation on the atonement and its effect in our lives and how the blood of Jesus works theologically. But I'll tell you, those things, they don't usually move the needle if our heart is not sincere. You can have it thought out as well as you want, but it's not going to move the needle if we're not real. I'm not saying none of that stuff matters, because it matters. But what often resonates with people in a way that makes an eternal impact and not just a temporary impact is if we are genuine or real in how we approach our faith. That's what God is calling us to do. And in how we tell others about it. This morning, these first 8 verses of 1 Thessalonians 2, we're kind of seeing this picture of Paul as we read this book, and we see an even more developed picture of how Paul lived among the believers of the New Testament. We're going to see here as we read how Paul, the apostle's faith, it was real to those people that he ministered to. So if you have your Bibles, your devices, or just a pair of eyeballs and you want to look at the screen, 1 Thessalonians 2, verses 1 through 8. So we're reading here this morning. This is Paul writing, you know, brothers and sisters, that our visit to you was not without results. We had previously suffered and been treated outrageously in Philippi, as you know. But with the help of our God, we dare to tell you his gospel in the face of strong opposition. For the appeal we make does not spring from error or impure motives, nor are we trying to trick you. On the contrary, we speak as those approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel. We are not trying to please people, but God, who tests our hearts. You know, we never used flattery, nor did we put on a mask to cover up greed. God is our witness. We were not looking for praise from people, not from you or anyone else, even though as apostles of Christ, we could have asserted our authority. Instead, we were like young children among you. Just as a nursing mother cares for her children, so we cared for you. Because we loved you so much, we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well. I'm going to stop there as far as the scripture that we're reading today. First thing I want us to notice just briefly is what we see in verse 1. That's this: when our faith is genuine, there's evidence even after we are gone. This is what Paul first wants to remind the Thessalonians of. Hey, Thessalonians, people we came to preach to, things were different after we left than they were before we came. You see, if the difference in the people that Paul had interacted with there when he was in Thessalonica, if it was only evident when he was there, then as soon as he left, they went back to doing whatever it was that they were doing before. Then the change was because Paul was there, and it wasn't because they truly encountered the gospel. The change was because Paul was there and he had convinced them to do what he was doing. Because friends, we know this, right? Hopefully, some of us are believers, right? We know that when you truly encounter the gospel, there's many things that can result from that. There's often noticeable positive change in people's lives right away when we stop living for ourselves and we decide to live for Jesus. A lot of us in this room would say, hey, I'm living proof of that. Man, Jesus changed me, changes me each day. But I can tell you the one thing that doesn't happen when we find Jesus is that we stay the same. It's impossible to truly encounter Jesus and not change. So the implication for us, as we do our best to live as disciples within the moment that God has placed us, and be assured, God has placed you in the moment, in the place, the family, the workplace he has, he's placed you there for a reason, is yeah, what we say matters. How we present the gospel matters. Knowing our Bibles, knowing some theology, all that stuff matters. But people are going to detect whether we genuinely have faith in how we live. Most likely when we don't know that they are watching. They're going to go say whether what we say we believe is real or not when we don't even know they're watching. And if our faith is genuine, there's going to be results that live on long after we're gone with the people that we're around. Now, here's the tricky thing about that, right? It might not look like them professing faith in God in that moment. We would love it to be 1 + 1 = 2. Right? I go and I live like God asks me to live. When I get the chance, I talk to them about the Lord. I say the sinner's prayer with them right there. Wow, they're going to heaven. But a lot of times, it doesn't work exactly that way. Maybe we're the ones that plant the seed. Right? It might seem like you didn't make much difference in them until they run into another believer months or years later, and they put two and two together, and they say, man, so-and-so, man, you remind me of Al. This guy Al, I remember he was talking to me about the same stuff. And then it's someone else who reaps the harvest, someone else who leads them in the prayer. But here's the thing that's going to be hard for us as people who are Christians, who care about our church. Maybe the person we poured our hearts into while we had the chance, maybe they end up plugging into someone else's church and not ours. We don't get to say we had 101 people instead of 100 people. But the name on the front of the building, it's completely inconsequential compared to the person's name in the book of life, right? If the evidence of our genuine faith is someone spending eternity with Jesus, then we have followed the example of Paul on this scripture. And I think we're going to get to heaven, hopefully, and we're going to run into people who we don't know that it was us that pointed them in the right direction. So if that's the goal, then how do we do it? How do we go be real, point people towards Jesus? How do we become someone who's real in the middle of our mission that God has placed us in? I believe that Paul, he gives us this roadmap as we make our way through 1 Thessalonians 2. Several different ways we can show ourselves to be genuine disciples, to be real in our everyday lives. We're doing the first half this week, second half next week. First thing we see from Paul is that when we are real, the truth defines us. When we're real, the truth defines us. You see, being someone that's defined by the truth can and it should be something that sets us apart from the rest of the world as believers. It starts with what Paul says in verse 2. He says, we had previously suffered and been treated outrageously in Philippi, as you know. But with the help of our God, we dare to tell you his gospel in the face of strong opposition. We know that Paul and those people that were traveling with them and on this missionary journey, they had been severely persecuted on their way to Thessalonica. When we talked about our first week in Thessalonians, how they had started this church, and the people that were not believers, they were so frustrated at Paul, they wanted to kick him out of the city and arrest him. They couldn't find him, so they arrested the people he had led to the Lord, and he had to leave for the safety of the church he had started. At Philippi, before they came to Thessalonica, they had been whipped. Their feet had been put into stocks. You go read the New Testament. Man, you read about the things Paul went through. Some crazy stuff. And when they first arrived to speak to the Thessalonians, there was major opposition to this message that they were bringing. And through all of this, it would have been really easier for them to kind of turn their back, just be quiet. But what Paul is saying, hey, you need to remember, we preach the gospel anyway. In this verse, we see this principle from Paul that I believe it's the same today as it was then. And that's this. I think I've mentioned it here before. It's easy to put others first and treat them with kindness when everything is going like we planned. When it's a perfect day, it is so easy to like walk into the gas station, just be nice to the gas station person, you know, nice to the guy at the baseball game. He's giving you a hard time when it's been a great day. It's a piece of cake. You're getting lots of sleep. There's no car trouble. Your health is good. I wrote down no car trouble before I had car trouble this week. I typed it into existence, I guess. I don't know. But a common test of genuine faith in Jesus is how we handle it when everything goes sideways on us. One of my favorite quotes in the world, I know I've said at church, but I love it so much. Mike Tyson said, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. Now, we're not likely to be put in the stockade in the United States, thankfully. But how we react on our toughest days, it speaks the truth about our walk with God. How we react when it has been frustrating, it speaks the truth about our walk with God. On the days, man, this is our life sometimes. On the days when the baby keeps you up, man, the crises, they just keep coming as fast as you can identify. The Pop-Tart came out of the toaster burned. Even though you put the knob where you always put it when you cook the Pop-Tarts. This happened the other day. I'm sure it was one of my son's fault. It had to have been. I put the thing in there and it came out like burnt to a crisp. In those moments, there's this chance for the truth of our faith to shine through because people are watching. And how we react in those hard moments, it can either identify us with Jesus or it can lump us in with everyone else that's looking for a temporary solution to their problems. How we react in these tough days, it shows us to be real to those around us. verses 3 through 6, they turn their attention to the way that Paul and his companions actually spoke. You see, they had, believe it or not, one of the same problems back in ancient times that we run into here in 2024. That is, there were people in Paul's day, they came preaching in God's name before Paul had gotten there. But what they were is more interested in the money they could make by preaching God's name than the hearts that were redeemed. You see, they had a hidden agenda behind what they were doing. And what was happening is when Paul showed up and his companions, they were making this accusation against him. They were lumping him in with those people who had come to manipulate. Just like they do now. Man, I cringe so much when I see a headline about a church that, a church that is preaching something that I don't believe is biblical. Or I see a pastor or a leader saying something that I just don't think is good. Because just then, as it is now, people can put church in one bucket. They can see church in the news, and they put, okay, Engage Boise is down the street. I'm going to put that in the bucket with the church I just saw in the news. And they assume if they see a heretical preacher say something that we must believe the same thing. Now, here's the truth, and I'm grateful for it, then as it is now, right? There are those they misuse the name of God for profit. I hate it, just like you do. But I am really glad I don't have to be the judge of whether someone's motives are pure. I think in many cases, people's motives start in the right place. But if someone's preaching, teaching, ministering in a dishonest way, and they do not repent, then the judgment that they are going to experience from God is far worse than anything I could say or do. Far worse than any status update I'm going to post, snarky comment, right? After all, one of the Ten Commandments is do not misuse the name of the Lord your God. Doesn't mean that people don't try to do it. You see, we have to be certain if we're going to be real in our faith that instead of trying to trick anyone into anything, that we're truthful in our everyday actions and in how we speak. We got to tell the truth in our financial dealings, our work hours, how we speak about others when they aren't in the room. And if we are truthful in those things, it's really easier for someone to believe us when we start talking about Jesus. If we say, Jesus has changed my life, but we act the same as everyone else, it's not going to make any sense to them. And it's so vital. We have to, this is, a thing that's so important to me. We must never claim God is speaking to us when it's really our own agenda we want to accomplish. Besides the fact that it is sinning against God, because it is, there are those that are going to see through it in a heartbeat. Man, people are better these days at seeing through fake people than they ever have been, especially young people. To use just the big picture idea, right? You can think of a preacher or a ministry claiming, hey, God is speaking to all of you that you should give. I'm not saying this to you. I'm just giving you an example. God is speaking to someone in this place. You should give $20,000. When what's really speaking is their desire for a new car. It's not God at all. Unfortunately, that kind of thing happens. When we are striving to be real in each day in our relationships, it has to be the truth that defines us, never any other agenda. And we can't say, hey, God is telling me this when it's really ourselves. Paul goes on to specifically talk about how he spoke when he was with the people, how the truth worked in and out of every single thing that he said. Now, Paul, he's answering these questions about his motives, about why he came, by reminding them about what he talked about. He and the missionaries, they spoke about the gospel. Gospel means good news. They spoke about the good news, it tells us in verse 4. And very crucially, verse 4 says, they resisted the urge to try and please a certain demographic or segment of people. Verses 4 and 5, we are not trying to please people, but God who tests our heart. You know, we never used flattery, nor did we put on a mask to cover up greed. God is our witness. Of course, right, there are things in this life that we hold dear. These things are not necessarily sinful in and of themselves. I'm speaking of things we like to be involved in, have. I'm speaking of the clothes we wear, the kind of car that we drive, the version of the Bible that we read, the environment, the sports teams we support, the music we like, the political candidate we support, that we rally behind. All those things, they matter to us. And you were like, dude, you had me until you started talking about Miley Cyrus earlier. I'm not sure if I can listen any longer. Some of those things we just mentioned, they actually matter. A lot of them are worth talking about, fun talking about. Man, I'll debate baseball with you all day just for the fun of it. And the Bible does give us direction on many parts of our lives. It really does. But those things that we just mentioned, those are not the gospel. As important as they can be to us sometimes, they're not the gospel. They are not the good news. The Dodgers payroll is not saving anybody, right? For Paul, how it could have looked, just to kind of simplify, right? He could have come to Thessalonica, and people are people, governments are governments. It's always been this way, right? He could have come to Thessalonica. He could have found whatever issue was frustrating the people at the time. Just then, just like it is now, it could have been taxes. It could have been disagreement over laws. It could have been the price of food and water. He could have gathered these people under the assumption that he was going to preach the gospel. Maybe he did do a little preaching of the gospel, but he kept them there by rallying them to a cause that didn't have much to do with the gospel. Might have sounded something like this. Maybe, Matt, you know Jesus, friends? Jesus, I met Jesus, you know? He said we should give to the poor and hungry. The governor should be doing a better job of that. Right? He just took it from the gospel to not the gospel. Instead of doing that, what it says is that Paul never used flattery. They did not put on a mask to cover up their own agenda or desires. Instead, they simply preached the gospel of Jesus. They simply preached the gospel of Jesus. And Paul, he's asking them to remember what he said. Hey, remember what I said to you. Because he knows, he can look back on what he preached and what he said. He knows that he did not, that he came and he preached the gospel and he did not seek to manipulate anyone for any reason. His heart was genuine. Now, the reason people besides him were using flattery, covering up their greed, interspersing things with the gospel that were not the gospel, and the reason it happens nowadays is because it works. It's a really effective way to get a big crowd if you want to intersperse the gospel with other stuff. It's a pretty effective way to like gain some notoriety these days, like post a controversial video. You'll get some clicks. Get people to know your name in our modern time. Man, it might be a really effective way to get your building built. Get someone you know that, you know, does pretty well and you know they're going to identify with you politically. So, you know, you can get them to give you write you a big check. But how is it, because that's a human temptation, right? How is it that they were able, Paul and his companions, how were they able to resist the temptation? Because they could kill two birds with one stone, right? They could preach the gospel and they could accomplish whatever agenda they had in mind. Maybe do like 80-20 preaching the gospel, 20% agenda. Still good. How are they able to resist it? Well, verse 6 gives us the answer. This is powerful. We were not looking for praise from people, not from you or anyone else, even though as apostles of Christ, we could have asserted our authority. It's important to note from this verse, friends, our motives are always driven by who we're trying to please. What we say is driven by who we are trying to please. And Paul and his companions, for their part, they weren't looking to tell people what they wanted to hear. They weren't looking to gain recognition from the people or within the city even. Even though, as apostles or disciples, and we could even substitute the word, you know, for our purposes, leaders or pastors, they were people that had authority. They had the position to do so. Instead of all of that, they were looking simply to honor God, to please him with how they ministered, to preach the good news. And for that reason, they could come and they could preach the gospel and only the gospel, and they could use the other stuff for the door. Now, I suspect Paul had strong opinions. He was a smart guy. And I suspect he had deep conversations with lots of people over a coffee or tea or whatever they did then. It's not that those important issues that we mentioned earlier never get into our conversations, because they do. Politics, the environment, Miley Cyrus, whatever is in the news. But if we're genuine about our faith, it's the truth of the gospel that defines those conversations and not the other way around. The news does not define the gospel, right? The gospel defines all the other stuff. It's not the murky nature of opinions and news articles that define our faith. It is the good news of Jesus. You see, if we're going to be real just like Paul was real, then the truth of the gospel must define us. We see next verses 7 and 8, our final two for today, actually. This example from Paul and his companions that we live with a compassionate heart. If we're going to be people who are genuine and real in our everyday lives, we have to figure out how to live with a compassionate heart. Pastor Joey actually posted this clip from a pastor in Tennessee this week. It was on Instagram. You posted a thing, and it was hard to track the guy's name down, which was kind of awesome. I love it. It was hard to track his name down. Anyway, he said something like, how can we tell people that there is a God who loves them if they come to church and it seems like we don't even like them? Whew, that hit a little close to home, right? You see, even though Paul, he had all the authority he could ever have needed from God as an apostle of Jesus, and he had this radical turnaround in his life, right? If you know a tiny bit about Paul, he was the worst persecutor of Christians. He was trying to kill them all, speak against them, did not believe Jesus was the Messiah. He was on the way to Damascus to try to arrest, kill more Christians. Jesus appeared to him, struck him blind. And he could share that experience, and people knew who he was before, and they've seen who he was after, and they've seen the change. And that experience he had, it would have given him credit with just about anyone as far as spiritual things go. He could have walked in and said, man, you know what, folks? I know you don't want to believe me, but Jesus appeared to me. Did you know that on the road? He struck me blind to get my attention. That's how important I was. I must be a pretty big deal. But instead of any of that, which he has the right to do, and all of that did happen, right? Look at the way Paul presents himself. As a nursing mother caring for her children. I don't know if you've ever been around a mom that's nursing. Most of you probably have. But the thing that I kind of forget until we have a baby around is it's kind of a full-time deal. Like, you do it, and then like 3 hours later, you have to do it again. Rain or shine, no matter what. You don't get to do anything else while you're doing it. But there's also nothing quite like the love a mother has for a newborn. And as there's nothing quite like the love that mother has. And as the kids grow, there's teaching and there's discipline and there's all kinds of things to experience together. But when they're newborns, when kids are newborns, they simply need compassion and care just about every moment. You might get a couple hours when they're sleeping and not making noise if you're lucky. But they need compassion and care in just about every moment. And even though we had the right to, instead of someone with a lot of authority, this is how Paul presents himself as a nursing mother. You know, sometimes we decide, lumping myself in the we here. Sometimes we decide as believers that it's our job to tell everybody how wrong they are. I'm not saying they're not wrong. People do and say crazy things. But we decide that it's our job to tell them. And I'm not saying that God doesn't direct us to speak to people sometimes, because he does. But we are called to be disciples of Christ first. I read this quote this week by Leon Morris, one of my favorite Bible commentators, that sums it up perfectly. So powerful. He said this: apostles are more conscious of their responsibility than of their privilege. You can substitute disciples. Disciples are more conscious of their responsibility than of their privilege. What Paul is saying here connects directly with what Jesus said in John 13:35, right? By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples. Make a list of what they got wrong and make sure you tell them later. Well, if you love one another, right? By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. And man, I know, like, I am with you. The world can be hard to take sometimes. And it seems like people can be so far apart from where we are. Even if we feel like we should agree, we can be so far apart. But what I see in Paul here, man, it forces me to ask myself this question. What if I started with compassion instead of confrontation? What if I just started there? What if we were known as the church, and I think a lot of us are and a lot of you are, what if Engage Boise was known as the place that started with compassion instead of confrontation? You see, if we're true disciples, we're more concerned with the commands of Jesus than getting recognition or getting our 2 cents in. If we're true disciples, we're more conscious of the responsibility God has given us to love others than we are telling them what we think. But the chance to tell them what we think, maybe it'll come later. I'm not even just talking about conversations or disagreements. I'm just talking about in life in general. Because what if God's church, the Big C Church, not just Engage Boise, but all the churches that believe in Jesus, what if we became more known as a place of compassion than condemnation? I'm not the first guy to say it, but what if? And this seems to kind of be where Paul was going here. He said, verse 9, because we loved you so much, we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well. might not seem like the first inclination, but one of the best ways to share the good news with anyone is to share our lives. Now, there's a lot of you I know in this place, because I know a bunch of you, who absolutely do this already through our church. You do it in your daily lives. But, man, what a critical aspect of being someone who is real or genuine and approaching our relationships. Both in and out of the church, we have to live our lives in a way that's compassionate. Yeah, you know, we may never, it's really easy to see someone that's in a mess and be like, phew, boy, I'd never do that. We might get involved, never get involved in the mess our coworker, our neighbor is in, precisely because we know Jesus, because he has given us his grace, and by his mighty hand, he has kept us safe. But for the grace of God, go I, says the phrase, right? But that doesn't mean that we can't show compassion to those around us. And let's not miss, for Paul, how these two aspects come together, right? Paul cared for the people with the tenderness of a new mother, and he shared the gospel with them. He did both. And in this world that is so hostile, right, and often when something bad happens to someone, our first thought, even if we don't say it is, right, you probably got what you deserved. I just think it's possible or even really likely that the compassion and the tenderness, they may open the door to the gospel. Like we mentioned before, it's not that nothing is ever said or advice is ever given, and we'll get to the giving of advice actually next week. That part, that's a few verses down. And even some of this is really pertinent to us because of the situation in which we find ourselves. In the United States of America, Boise, Idaho, 2024 presidential election this year. This is why this is meaningful to us, because of everything that's going on in our culture. But to be real or genuine, we have to figure out, in the middle of all of that, how do we live with a compassionate heart? To really bottom line it for all of us, right? We have to live with a compassionate heart because God is compassionate towards us. Man, I, John Heisel III, I got to live with a compassionate heart because God is so compassionate towards me. Even when I ask forgiveness for a thing and I do the same dumb thing a week later, God is so compassionate towards me. And if you're far from God today, I believe God would have you know he's not mad at you. He's not mad at you. He desires relationship with you today. He wants you to figure it out, but he desires relationship with you today. Don't you bow your heads. As we close church, we're going to sing in just a minute, but I just want to encourage you in this moment to ask God, along with me, for a heart that's real. And as we look to do that, look for a true relationship with those around us, I just want to pray over you for a moment. Lord, thank you for your word, that it's sharp and alive, and even though I go read Thessalonians, which I've read dozens of times before, Lord, you reveal new things. And Lord, thank you that you have placed us right where you've placed us. Every person in this room, in their home, in their workplace, in this church, in this city, you've made us for this moment. And I pray that Engage Boise would be known as a church full of people that are honest and genuine. God, I'm so thankful for the compassion, the love you've poured out towards me. I'm so thankful for what Psalm 103 says. You've thrown my sins away as far as the east is from the west. So thankful you do not treat me as my sins deserve. And that not only goes for me, but every other person I run into. My best friend and my worst enemy. So this morning, Lord, as we sing and you begin to bind us together, I ask that you would inject into every one of us a more genuine and more real heart than we've ever had before. Friends, would you stand this morning? We're going to sing. And I just want to encourage you today, if you're here and you walked in and you're like, I think God is mad at me. I've been kind of a dummy this week. I believe God wants you to know he's not mad at you. He loves you. He wants a relationship with you. I'd love to pray with you about it. If you want to come find me as we sing this song, I'll be right down here. But let's sing this morning.
Thanks for joining us. If you'd like to learn more, you can visit us at engageboise.com. Have an amazing day.